Despite Hannah's warning, Merrin experienced little discomfort for the first 3 days after the seeding of his eye. His greatest hardship was being deprived of sight, and the subsequent boredom. Taita tried to entertain him with reminiscences of the many adventures they had shared over the years, the places they had visited and the men and women they had known. They discussed what effect the drought of the Nile was having on their homeland, the suffering inflicted on the people, and how Nefertiti and the Queen were dealing with the calamity. They spoke about their home at Galala and what they might find there when they returned from their odyssey. These were all subjects they had covered many times before, but the sound of Taita's voice soothed Merrin. He was woken on the fourth day by sharp pains lancing through the socket. They were as regular as the beat of his heart, and so painful that he gasped with each stab and reached instinctively to his eye with both hands. Taita sent the attendant to find Hannah. She came at once and unwound the bandage. "No mortification," she said immediately, and began to replace the old bandage with a fresh one. "This is the result we hoped for. The seeding has grafted and is beginning to take root." "You use the same terms as a gardener," Taita said. "That is what we are. Gardeners of men," she replied. Merrin did not sleep for the next 3 days. As the pain intensified, he moaned and tossed on his mattress. He would not eat, and was able to drink only a few bowlfuls of water each day. When at last sleep overcame him, he lay on his back, arms strapped to his sides with strips of leather, and snored through the mouth-hole in his bandages. He slept for a night and a day. When he awoke, the itching began. "It feels as though fire ants are crawling in my eye," he groaned and tried to rub his face against the rough stone wall of the cell. The attendant had to call two of his colleagues to restrain him, for Merrin was a powerful man. With lack of food and sleep, though, the flesh seemed to melt from his body. His ribs showed clearly through the skin of his chest, and his belly shrank until it seemed to rest against his backbone. Over the years, he and Taita had become so close that Taita suffered with him. The only time he could escape from the cell was when Merrin fell into short and restless bouts of sleep. Then he could leave him in the care of an attendant and wander in the botanical gardens. Taita found a peculiar quality of peace in these gardens that drew him back time after time. They were not laid out in any particular order. Rather, they were a maze of avenues and pathways, some of which were heavily overgrown. Each twist or turning led to fresh vistas of delight. In the warm, sweet airs, the mingled scents of the blooms were heady and intoxicating. The grounds were so extensive that he encountered only a few of the gardeners who tended this paradise. At his appearance they slipped away, more like wraiths than humans. On each visit he discovered delightful new arbors and shaded walks that he had overlooked before, but when he tried to find his way back to them on his next visit, they had disappeared and been replaced with others no less lovely and enticing. It was a garden of exquisite surprises. On the 10th day after the seeding, Merrin seemed easier. Hannah rebandaged the eye and declared herself pleased. "As soon as the pain ceases completely, I'll be able to remove the stitches from the eyelid and review the progress he has made." Merrin passed another peaceful night and woke with a fine appetite for his breakfast and a resuscitated sense of humour. It was Taita, rather than the patient, who felt depleted and drained. Even though his eyes were still covered, Merrin seemed to sense Taita's condition, his need to rest and be alone. Taita was often surprised by the flashes of intuition his usually bluff and uncomplicated companion displayed, and was moved when Merrin said, "You have played nursemaid to me long enough, Magus. Leave me alone to piddle the mattress if I need to. Go and rest. I am sure you must look dreadful." Taita took up his staff and hitched the skirts of his tunic under his girdle and set off for the upper section of the gardens furthest from the sanatorium. He found this the most attractive area. He was not sure why, except that it was the wildest, most untended part of the crater. Huge boulders had broken off the rock wall and tumbled down to stand like ruined monuments to ancient kings and heroes. Over them, plants climbed and twisted in flowering profusion. He picked his way along a track he had thought he knew well. But at the point that had turned sharply between two of the great boulders, he noticed for the first time that another well-defined path continued straight on towards the soaring cliff of the crater wall. He was sure that it had not been there on his last visit, but he had become accustomed to the garden's illusory features and followed it without hesitation. Within a short distance, he heard running water somewhere to his right. He followed the sound and at last pushed his way through a screen of greenery to discover another hidden nook. He stepped into the little clearing and looked around cautiously. A tiny stream issued from the mouth of a grotto, ran down over a series of lichen-covered ledges and into a pool. It was all so charming and restful that Taita eased himself onto a patch of soft grass and with a sigh leant back against the trunk of a fallen tree. For a while he gazed down into the dark waters. Deep in the pool he picked out the shadow of a large fish half concealed by a rock shelf and the ferns that overhung the water. Its tail waved hypnotically like a flag in a lazy wind. Watching it, he realized how tired he was and closed his eyes. He did not know how long he had slept before he was awakened by soft music. The musician sat on a stone ledge at the far side of the pool. A boy of three or four, an imp, with a mop of curls that bounced on his cheeks when he moved his head in time to the tune he was blowing on a reed flute. His skin was tanned to gold and his features were angelic, while his little limbs were perfectly rounded and plump. He was beautiful, but when Taita gazed at him with the inner eye, he saw no aura surrounding him. "What is your name?" Taita asked. The imp let the flute drop from his lips to dangle on the cord round his neck. "I have many names," he replied. His voice was childlike and lisping, lovelier even than the enchanted music he had played. "If you cannot give me a name, then tell me who you are," Taita insisted. "I am many," said the imp. "I am legion." "Then I know who you are. You are not the cat, but the mark of her paw," Taita said. He would not say her name aloud, but he guessed that this cherub was a manifestation of Eos. "And I know who you are, Taita the eunuch." Taita's expression remained inscrutable, but the gibe pierced the shell that protected his core like an arrow of ice. The child came to his feet with the grace of a fawn rising from its forest bed. He stood facing Taita and lifted the flute to his lips again. He played a softly lilting note, then took the reed from his lips. "Some call you Taita the Magus, but half a man can never be more than half a magus." He played a silvery trill. The beauty of the music could not alleviate the agony his words had inflicted. He dropped the pipe again and pointed down into the dark pool. "What do you see there, Taita the deformed? Do you recognize that image? Taita who is neither man nor woman?" As he was bidden, Taita stared down into the dark waters. He saw the image of a young man appear from the depths, his hair thick and lustrous, his brow wide and deep, his eyes alive with wisdom and humour, understanding and compassion. It was the countenance of a scholar and an artist. He was tall, with long, clean limbs. His torso was lightly muscled. His bearing was poised and graceful. His groin was clothed by a short skirt of bleached white linen. It was the body of an athlete and warrior. "Do you recognize this man?" the imp insisted. "Yes," Taita whispered huskily, his voice almost failing. "It is you," said the imp. "You, as you once were, so many long years ago." "Yes," Taita murmured. "Now see yourself as you have become," said the infernal child. The back of the young Taita bowed, and his limbs became thin and stick-like. The fine muscle turned stringy and his belly pouted. His hair faded to grey and became long, straight and sparse, the white teeth yellow and crooked. Deep lines appeared in his cheeks, and the skin beneath his chin sagged into folds. The eyes lost their sparkle, although the image was a caricature. Reality was only slightly exaggerated. Then suddenly the loincloth was stripped away, as if by a gust of wind, and the groin exposed. A thin fringe of frizzy grey pubic hair surrounded the glaring pink puckered cicatrice left by the cut of the castrating knife and the red-hot cauterizing rod. Taita moaned softly.
"Do you recognize yourself as you are now?" asked the imp.
Strangely, his tone was filled with infinite compassion. The pity wounded Taita more than the mockery. "Why do you show me these things?" he asked.
"I come to warn you. If your life was lonely and barren before, it will soon become 1,000 times worse. Once again you will know love and longing. But those passions can never be requited. You will burn in the hell of an impossible love."
Taita had no words to deny him, for already the agony the imp threatened had taken its grip. This, he knew, was just a foretaste of what must follow, and he groaned.
"The time will come when you pray for death to release you from the agony," the imp went on remorselessly. "But think on this, Taita, the long liver. How long is your suffering to last before death gives you surcease?"
In the pool the image of the ancient figure faded, and that of the beautiful, vigorous youth replaced it. He smiled up at Taita from the dark water, teeth shining, eyes sparkling.
"What has been taken away, I can give back to you," said the child.
And his voice was the purring of a kitten. The silken cloth dropped from around the youth's waist to reveal perfectly formed genitalia, majestic and weighty.
"I can give you back your manhood. I can make you as whole again as the image I set before you."
Taita could not tear his gaze away from it. As he stared at it, the phallus of the phantom youth swelled and lengthened. Taita was filled with longings he had never entertained in all of his life. They were so grossly prurient that he knew they could not have sprung from his own mind, but had been placed there by the diabolical imp. He tried to tread them down, but they oozed back like the slime of a cesspool. The beautiful child lifted one small hand and pointed at Taita's groin.
"Anything is possible, Taita, if only you believe in me."
Suddenly, Taita felt a powerful sensation in his crotch. He had no idea what was happening to him, until he realized that the sensations experienced by the phantom youth were being mirrored in his own body. He felt the weight of that magnificent phallus tugging at his guts. When he watched it stiffen and arc like a drawn war bow, he felt the tension stretch his own nerves to breaking point. When he saw the youth's glands engorged with blood, turning a dark, angry red, it resonated in every fibre of his own body. A copious ejaculation gushed from the gaping cleft, and he felt the exquisite agony of each scalding jet. His back arched involuntarily, and his lips drew back in rictus as he clenched his teeth. A hoarse cry burst from his throat. His whole body jerked and trembled like that of a man seized by the palsy. Then he sagged back on the grass, panting as though he had run a league, his strength spent.
Had you forgotten? Had you suppressed the memory of the ultimate pinnacle of physical delight? What you have just experienced is only a grain of sand compared to the mountain that I can give to you, said the child, and ran to the edge of the stone step.
He poised there and looked across at Taita for the last time.
Think on it, Taita. It is yours if you dare stretch out your hand to me.
He dived cleanly into the pool. Taita saw his pale body flash as he shot down into the depths and disappeared. He could not summon the strength to rise to his feet again until the sun had made half its transit of the sky.